Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hello and welcome into the 24/7 Sports Football Recruiting Podcast. I'm National Recruiting Analyst Cooper Patek alongside 24/7 Sports Director of Scouting Andrew Ivins. We got a great show for you today. What a beautiful day. Wednesday, March 19th, 11 o'clock Central, noon Eastern time. Beautiful day for Clemson to sue the ACC. They become the second school in the conference to sue the ACC right there with Florida State. Guess what? We also got Scottie Scheffler back-to-back champs, back-to-back weeks, Players Championship. Drew, I think you texted me Sunday. I wasn't paying attention. I watched Saturday. Sunday you texted me. You said, Scottie Scheffler's a bad man. How about our boy Scottie, huh?
Yeah, well, Wyndham Clark's putt lipping out, I think that cost me about some sizable change. Had Wyndham Clark in the future. Cooper, you're going to talk about golf. You're going to talk about Clemson. You got to talk about March Madness. You got to be company man, CBS, big tournament this week. My FAU Owls are in it. I'm heading to Brooklyn, hopefully, later this week. So it's a good week for sure.
You went last year, didn't you?
I did. I was in MSG, so making the return to the Empire State.
Who do the Owls have in the first round?
Northwestern journalism major going up against FAU, which no longer has a journalism program. So
what do we got? 8-9 matchup?
8-9.
There you go. One of the favorites. It's going to be a hard one to predict. March Madness, that time of year. It's also a great time of year for college football recruiting, which you're in the right place, guys. If you're joining us on X, we appreciate you stopping by. If you have questions, comments, anything along the way, make sure to submit those in the chat. You can also follow us on the 24/7 Sports YouTube channel. That is the place to be. Make sure to like and subscribe, guys. As always, we appreciate you joining us. And Drew, how about this topic? You sent this one to me last week, and I find this pretty fascinating. How about this? Records obtained by the USA Today show that Deion Sanders has never had to leave campus to seal the deal for any players, so high school commitments. What we're saying here is Deion Sanders primetime has had zero in-home visits. The university confirmed that Coach Prime has made no off-campus contacts with recruiting prospects since he was hired there in early December 2022. When you sent me that, I didn't really know how to react to it. It really kind of caught me by surprise. But Drew, I mean, I just your thoughts on this, and I'll give you kind of my take now that I've had a couple of days to stew on it. But when you heard this, what was your reaction to it?
It's kind of wild. But I brought this up back when he flipped Travis Hunter from Florida State to Jackson State. I said, I think Prime did this without an in-home visit. Now, Travis Hunter took a low-key official to Jackson State when he was committed to Florida State, but there was no Prime time showing up at Travis Hunter's house there outside of Atlanta. So I guess I'm not surprised, but to see it in writing and then to see that, I don't know, there hasn't really been a ton of media coverage of this. Like the USA Today, you know, got the records request and put this out there. And I think it's kind of a big deal. I'll say this, Cooper. I think Deion is ahead of the curve, right? How many more in-home visits with head coaches are we really going to get with where the NCAA is going in terms of, right, they moved the early signing period up to the first week of December, right? The season runs through Thanksgiving weekend. I mean, unless you got a ridiculous NetJets account or your school owns a plane, like how are you going to go see all your recruits? Like, I think the in-home visits for college coaches are gone. They're dead, especially if we get the summer signing period. Unless they allow those guys to go out on the road in May and April and all that stuff. But, you know, we keep saying it's going to more of an NFL model. The recruitment's done. It's more of a an interview process. And I think Deion, I don't know if he meant to do this, but he might have been ahead of the curve a little bit.
I think you always bring up the point, like, all right, the college game is kind of following the NFL model. And when you bring that up, you talk about the top 30 visits a lot. I think when you evaluate this, you have to be really careful. You have to evaluate Deion Sanders in a vacuum. And I think there are a lot of different variables that you have to weigh. I think the other thing is he's been dealing with a pretty serious injury that's been nagging him for quite some time. I think you have to take that into consideration. I mean, at some point, I think a lot of people thought that Deion Sanders was going to lose his foot. The other thing is Deion Sanders has a very unique style of recruiting. I think the other part is his first year, they took 51 transfers. They had 20 plus high school signees. This past year, they only had 7 signees when it came to high school. So when you evaluate that a little bit, sure, would you like if I was Corey Phillips, a director of player personnel at Colorado, would it make me feel a little bit better when you're going toe-to-toe with Dan Lanning and the Ryan Day and the Kirby Smarts of the world for a guy like Jordan Seaton? Would it make me feel a little bit more comfortable if Deion Sanders was on the road in a house, in a living room, looking eye to eye with a player like Jordan Seaton? For sure. But that being said, this is not really Deion Sanders. It's never been his style. This is not who he is. Not to say that it's right or wrong. I just don't have that much of an opinion on it really at the end of the day, because they seem to make their hay in college. And quite honestly, Deion Sanders, his reputation, how strong it is, they've had no issues in terms of being one of the most robust transfer portal programs over the last 2 years. I think he showed that. That being said, I do think it's a little bit of a vulnerability in high school when you do go up for players like Jordan Seaton. I mentioned him, Draylen Miller, Cam Michael, all guys that they signed, by the way, but you wonder how many got away and you wonder how many thought to themselves, well, hey, I got Kirby Smart, Dan Lanning, Ryan Day in my living room, yet this other coach that's recruiting me, I have no face-to-face relationship with him other than my official visit to Boulder, right? So I think there maybe you leave yourself open to interpretation a little bit. But outside of that, Andrew, I really have no issue with it.
I mean, I don't have an issue with it. It's working. You go to the 2023 cycle, they signed the 30th best high school class. This past year, you said it, only took 7 guys that finished 119th behind a number of group of 5 programs. But the focus was the transfer portal. That's the other thing, right? You want to talk about the NCAA tournament. I don't know how much college basketball you follow, Cooper, but all these teams that didn't get into the tournament that had NIT invitations, right? They could have played in that term. They turned them down. Like Rick Pitino wanted to get out on the road and recruit and start working the transfer portal, which opened up on Monday. So I think it's a little bit of that. And then my other thought that pops into my head, and I don't know if this is true, but I always heard the rumors, like if you were going to take an official visit to Hawaii, like there had to have been some understanding that you were really considering it, right? Because I don't know, you've been asked that question. You can take 5 official visits. Where do you want to go? Hawaii's always one of them. You want to go out, you know, see the island, fly out there. But Hawaii doesn't want to host 120 official visitors. They want the guys that want to be there for the right reasons. To me, Deion Sanders, you know, you go in home with one kid, then all the recruits are going to want that. And it seems like this generation of student athletes relates to Prime. I think it's Skip, me and you. But these kids, you know, they look up to him. So I think it says a lot. And the fact that he could reel in Jordan Seaton, you know, Cormani McClain a few cycles ago. We mentioned Travis Hunter. There's other guys. Dylan Edwards, that was a flip from Notre Dame. Draylon Miller, you know, he's gone head-to-head, and he hasn't had to use that in-home visit. I just wonder how many other coaches have that type of pull.
Not many. And, you know, I encourage people in the chat, especially if you have a question, comment, criticism, that is the place to put it. We already have one. Ryan says, awful take. If any other coach than Deion Sanders had a horrible high school class and wasn't doing visits, people would be calling for their job. What if Harsin did the same? Brian Harsin is not Deion Sanders. Deion Sanders is the most marketable head coach in college football history. I mean, we're talking about a guy with his own Amazon Prime show. He's different, right? And you have to admit that. Whether you like it or not, in terms of the hype train, Deion Sanders, we saw that in full force in the first 4 weeks of the season in college football last year. I get it. You might not like it. That being said, if there is one person that can kind of skirt the system, it would be Deion Sanders. That's the whole point that I'm trying to make here. He's one of one in this scenario. And guess what? If there's 129 other FBS coaches that might not be able to do that, that's the whole point that we're trying to make about Deion Sanders. So pretty fascinating. We'll see what happens. The other part about this, like I said, you look at the talent composition, how they build their roster there in Boulder, a lot of it through the collegiate ranks. So how much of an emphasis actually is the in-home visit for Deion Sanders? The other thing I would say, last thing I would say on this, is I hope that they're being productive with the time that they are not spending on the road in terms of being in a living room with some of these high school players, and we'll see what happens. So certainly fascinating, certainly an enigma when it comes to Deion Sanders, and something that I think we will be keeping our eye on in the future. Guys, I said it earlier, you can find us on X now. You can also find us on the 24/7 Sports YouTube channel. New time, our first time last week launching the new time, 11 o'clock Central, 12 o'clock Eastern. Will also be on X. Guys, we appreciate you joining us as always. If you're on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe. Guys, it keeps the lights on for us so Andrew can continue to go to Arnold Palmer Invitationals like he does on the weekends. All right, Drew, we had the Elite 11 Regionals, the first of many throughout the next couple months before we kind of build up to the Elite 11 Finals in July. And we had one of the first invites, and it was Hassan Longstreet, a guy that is firmly inside our top 32, not meant it as a five-star. We only have 16 of those right now. Longstreet, the number five quarterback in the country, number 28 player overall. He's got a commitment date coming up on April 14th. Texas A&M leads on the crystal ball, but he's got some visits coming up. Auburn, Oregon, Ole Miss, UCLA, the Aggies also in there as well. They seem to be in a good position. But Drew, let's start with the player a little bit. You know, we went, I would say, higher than the rest of the industry on Hassan Longstreet. We've kind of been that way for a while. This was a guy that you feel very, very convicted in, especially kind of evaluating him in that Trinity League in California. Played some of his best ball against St. John Bosco this past year. I don't think it was a shock to see him get the invite to the Elite 11 Finals.
It felt, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? It felt like, okay, other people see it. And Brian Stumpf and those guys at the Elite 11, they do an excellent job. Only one invite went out. You know, Greg Biggins from 24/7 Sports, Brandon Huffman, Blair Angulo, they were all boots on the grounds for us. I don't know if Longstreet had the best of days, but I was talking with Greg Biggins yesterday, you know, just kind of picking his brain. And the interesting nugget here is Hassan has been dealing, I think, with a meniscus injury that kind of came to light. And that explains why when we saw him at the Battle Miami tournament back in January, he only threw a handful of passes. Greg also pointed out Hassan, 11-inch hands. He also was over 6'1". I think 11-inch hands are the biggest we've seen for a quarterback in this class. Why does it matter? Obviously, gripping the football. And then Hassan, he's got, I think, the livest arm in this 2025 class. You want to talk about pace and velocity? I mean, you get around him, it is a quarterback you want to see on the driving range. He just fires that thing all around the field. Not surprised he got the first invite, and I'm excited to see him at the Elite 11 Finals in June, because I think he's a guy that, you know, maybe the rest of the industry corrects with him. And Coop, the other thing is the reports from Blair Angulo about Hassan and his upcoming visit schedule. Going to get to Auburn, right? Also going to check out Texas A&M, the Crystal Ball leader, Oregon, Ole Miss, and UCLA. I think that's an interesting mix of schools. And he's our top-ranked uncommitted arm, quarterback number five right now.
How long have you been the DOS? 2 years now?
I think somewhere in that range.
DOS, Director of Scouting, by the way, for those who don't know the acronym. Have you seen a quarterback with a liver, like more explosive arm in the last two cycles than him?
I think and just in terms of like pace and pop and velocity, like I think it's up there with like Quinn Ewers and Dylan Raiola just on air, right? You know, he might not have that touch, but, you know, both of those kids, when you got to the Elite 11 and you saw them throw it, you're like, okay, this is a little bit different than others. And I get similar vibes to Hassan, and I've only seen limited in-person sample size. I've dug into the tape. What about you? I mean, would you say that's fair?
It's the most explosive, whether it's the strongest, like there's a difference. But when you talk about like that intermediate drive ball, I mean, I think he's got the best fastball I've seen over the last 2 years, you know, and I think a little bit of a baseball background. You talk about that frame, 6'1", it's explosive. It's compact. twitchy. Think a little bit of about, yeah, a quick twitch, explosive, kind of more of what we thought Jaden Davis was going to be. But in terms of, I mean, you mentioned it, the 11-inch hands, it's kind of like Russell Wilson territory. So just the command over the football is kind of rare. So I'm excited about him. Drew, we kind of mentioned that A&M is in the driver's seat right now. I still think there's a lot of runway for this one to kind of play out a multitude of different ways. Is there a potential fit that gets you the most excited with Husan Longstreet?
Auburn, right? I feel like all we do is gush about that receiving class they took or receiving group last cycle. And Hugh Freeze, what they're doing this year on defense, brought in Walker White last cycle, another kind of dual threat talent that can make some high level throws. I mean, Auburn needs to figure out that quarterback position. You take Walker White, you take Husan. I think the future of that room would be in really good shape. And you know they're going to be active in the transfer portal. They always are. That's the one to me. And then UCLA, new staff there. They've picked some stuff up on the recruiting trail as of late. I thought that was notable that Blair tucked it in there. I think UCLA is going to get the last unofficial visit before he announces that commitment on April 14th.
I'm glad you brought them up. I have no idea what to expect. Eric Bieniemy. Right, you think about him, and I would say the last couple years, I haven't seen an offensive coordinator more extensively covered than Eric Bieniemy from his time with Kansas City and Patrick Mahomes. And you know, obviously, I think a lot of people were trying to figure out, all right, who gets credit here? Is it Andy Reid? Is it Bieniemy? Is it Patrick Mahomes himself who should get a lot of the credit? Bieniemy goes to the Commanders, dealt a tough hand under Ron Rivera, Sam Howell. Point being, now starting back in college, UCLA, Ethan Garbers, we'll see what happens. I wouldn't be surprised to see if he could really maybe kind of swoon one his way. We'll see if it's Husan Longstreet. Maybe they're going to have a little California magic there. So Longstreet, certainly a guy that has our full attention here at 24/7 Sports. Drew, some other names, TJ Latif, Michael Tolofsen, who's committed to Arizona State. I think Greg Biggins did a really good job kind of mentioning these guys as standouts. Latif, he's got an OV to Nebraska next month. Ryola's there. We expect him to play early. What would you think about Latif, who's really, you know, he's shown flashes, but I think is a little bit of a mixed bag.
Yeah, I think he'd be the perfect quarterback for Nebraska to take after bringing in Ryola. Another guy with, I hate using this term again, but live arm, Coop. I mean, you turn on the tape, he can whip it around there. I can't wait till that Elite 11 footage gets posted from this past weekend, because the Elite 11 footage from last year, I don't know what TJ Latif was kind of doing. The footwork was choppy. He didn't seem in sync. I want to see if he has turned that around, but thinking about the Cornhuskers in Nebraska, I mean, it's going to be difficult to take an arm after signing a five-star talent the previous cycle. Not only a five-star talent, a legacy recruit. And when we talk about Nebraska football moving forward, I know we're still a couple months away from really the offseason and gearing up for 2024, but it's just going to be Ryola over and over, beat over our heads. I'm telling you right now, like Fox Big Noon kickoff, that is going to be the storyline. When is Dylan going to play? Is he going to play? So it's a difficult – and Coop, you've been on the other side, right? I mean, you brought in when you were working at Washington or Michigan. I mean, you've been around it. When you bring in one of these big guys, all the quarterbacks know who the other quarterbacks are. Now, you want a guy that doesn't care who's already in the room, but it's a difficult situation. And to me, TJ Latif is a guy that has the arm talent. You know, I'm not putting him in the Dylan Raiola category, but he can distribute the football. You know, he's been dinged up a little bit here and there. I think it would be a home run for them when it comes to quarterback recruiting here in 2025.
It'd be the one fit with a quarterback of the future already there in Ryola and Lincoln where you're like, okay, I get this. I get on board. Like, I see the vision with a guy like TJ Latif, who's going to more than likely need a redshirt year, probably going to need a year after that. We'll see what happens with Dylan Ryola. Best case scenario, he plays for 3 years, right? Has a lot of success, and then he's off to the NFL. But I think Latif needs a little bit of seasoning. I think the TD to INT ratio this past year was a little rough. But that being said, you talk to Greg Biggins, gives you some more context. Obviously, a lot of different variables there to consider, but would be a really good fit there.
Yeah, I think past two seasons, 31 touchdowns, 14 interceptions, and he's playing in a really difficult league. He doesn't have a ton of talent around him. So I think what I would put next to him in the scouting report, battle-tested, right? And give me a battle-tested quarterback to follow up you know, Dylan Raiola.
All right, guys, we talked about Tuesday and Wednesday. You got the Oyster Boys. We're on X. We're on 24/7 Sports YouTube channel. Make sure to like and subscribe. Also, if you have a question, put it right there in the chat. Also, we'll get to that at the end of the show. I talked about Tuesday, Wednesday. How about Thursday? We got 24/7 Sports Live. Smoke Dixon, Carl Reed, myself, Emily Proud, handful of people that always play musical chairs on that show. Topics obviously change by the week depending on where we are in the recruiting calendar. Also in the NFL, we've done a lot on the mock draft side of that as well. Make sure to check that out on the 24/7 Sports YouTube channel. All right, Drew, it is camp combine season, as we just touched on, Elite 11 regionals in LA. But we also had the Under Armour camp in Houston, and one of the most loaded camps throughout the entire camp schedule. And our alpha dog, none other than five-star, newly minted five-star, Jonah Williams of Under Armour Houston, and Drew, the number two linebacker in the country, number 11 player overall. I think the more we dig in on this guy, the more excited that we get. I mean, you don't throw it around very often, but I think if there is that one chess piece, do-it-all, unicorn type of player in this class, it's Jonah Williams. 6'3", 200 pounds. He's got on-ball ability, off-ball ability. He's played corner. He's played safety. Does a little bit of everything. Offensive snaps to go with it. But he's also a really decorated MLB prospect, which I think the scouts, when it comes to the diamond, are just excited as we are when it comes to the prospect of Jonah Williams potentially playing baseball. Drew, this feels like we're going to have to kind of hold our breath a little bit in terms of wait-and-see mode on, hey, which way is he going to lean here? Because ultimately, at the end of the day, this guy could be a seven-figure guy in the MLB if it comes to fruition.
Yeah, I mean, you said unicorn with Jonah Williams. That's just him on the football player. I think he is a defensive chess piece, and I know you've thrown out the comp, Isaiah Simmons, the former defender at Clemson. It hasn't really worked out in the NFL, but that's the guy you need to picture, right? You can play him anywhere on defense. Hudson Standish, who was there for us and wrote the top performers, he said that Jonah Williams ran 4.5 in the 40 and had a 4.2 shuttle. Still waiting on the official numbers, but he's a freak athlete. He also plays basketball and is dunking, but it's Mike Roach who brought up this MLB thing. And I didn't even really know this was like a possibility. And Mike Roach talked to one of his buddies who used to be an MLB scout. I don't know if you read through all the text messages, Cooper, that Mike sent us, but I found it fascinating. And that's because I guess Jonah Williams doesn't have a ton of like baseball footage out there. So Mike Roach's friend goes and scouts Jonah Williams. And he says, yes, this is a seven-figure player, right? He's raw, but as a hitter, as a center fielder, like this is what MLB scouts drool over. And Roach in his notebook coming out of the event said, Jonah's open to the idea of playing both sports. But if he is a first round pick, it sounds like he might play baseball. Who was the last guy we were in this boat with? Deuce Robinson, right? Was in the area code games. Deuce Robinson, who's now playing wide receiver at USC. I don't even know if he's playing baseball. Is he playing baseball for the Trojans? I've been meaning to look that up. This is going to be one of the more fascinating storylines to follow in the 2025 cycle, because I think Jonah Williams is absolutely blue chip talent, potential game changer. And then this MLB cloud hanging over. All right, are we even going to see him suit up on Saturdays?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a good question. You know, we have him at 11 right now, and it's just like, man, this guy, you get so excited about all the different things that he can do. Drew, I think it's hard to kind of put him in a bucket. You think about his recruitment, Papa Roach got us covered on that one too. Ohio State, March 30th. Texas, first week of April. A&M on the 13th. Oregon, May 17th. If there's one guy that I can maybe comp him to a little bit, Sonny Styles. I don't know, a little bit different. Yeah, Sonny Styles good. Moving to that's linebacker. Two really versatile guys. Sonny Styles kind of started out as a safety, put on the natural weight, was another guy, was a reclassification. I don't know. It's kind of the name that comes in my mind.
All right, any of those four schools, any of them jump out to you? Oregon for me, like Oregon. And don't they have a linebacker that also plays baseball, like a high, like hitting number three in their lineup? I'm going to look that up. I'm looking that up.
Look that up while I kind of marinate on, you know, what would be the best fit. I don't know. Wait and see in terms of Ohio State. But I think about Pete Kwiatkowski and his background with pass rushers. And, you know, I get excited about what they've done so far with our guy, Anthony Hill, guy that we had ranked as the number one linebacker in 2023. And, you know, you think about that type of multi-dimensional versatility, position flexibility, what you can do with Jonah Williams. I think you can utilize him as a pass rusher, but Drew, he's more physical between the tackles than I think you would expect. You know, I also love his ability to drop in coverage as well. That's the other thing about his game that I think is pretty exceptional, is the fact that you see him at corner, you see him at safety, and this is not just a guy playing those positions because he's the best athlete on the field. This is a guy that's very comfortable playing on an island, on the perimeter, playing safety, playing the deep third. I mean, he's incredibly fascinating. He's a chameleon in terms of what you can do with his versatility.
All right, Oregon does have a guy, plays linebacker, outfield for the Ducks. Bryce.
Let me guess his name. What was his name?
Bryce. Go ahead, because I don't.
No, I remember a guy that we recruited at Oregon. I'm not sure where he ended up. Robbie Snelling.
No, Bryce Bocher is the guy. And then Tom Lloyd texted me, Deuce Robinson has played in 3 games for USC baseball, so he is playing baseball.
Here we go. Shout out Tom Lloyd, doing a fantastic job. If you want to follow him, Tom Lloyd 247. He was on our show last week, brought the noise. Love Tom Lloyd. Drew, we had a couple other notable standouts. Charles Ross, I think Gabe Brooks is a little upset with me about this one. From North Shore High School, there in Texas, committed to the LSU Tigers. Blake Baker, that's our boy. It seems like he got a good one. I think LSU, man, they haven't felt like themselves, not only at the point of attack, but at the second level. I mean, you think about the guys that they used to bring in year after year after year. Well, they looked a lot like Charles Ross. I mean, you think about this kid, 6'1", 215, 220 pounds, just punched a 10.48 in the 100-meter dash. Pretty insane, Drew. I'm pretty excited about him. We got a high 3-star grade on him right now. Certainly a guy that's going to be reevaluated. But I'm like, I mean, you turn on the tape, it's all there.
Yeah, even if that 10.48 is like heavily wind-aided, what's the speed score for us in next gen? It's got to be like 98.
97, 98 would be my best guess. Yeah, he can roll. He can roll. Drew, the other guy that I think you and I kind of had asterisk. How about Lance Jackson, top 247, number 72 player overall. Top 10 defensive lineman. He's committed to Texas. You might remember his older brother, Landon Jackson, I believe. We'll double check that. We'll double check that.
I'm
sorry
on it.
Sorry to put you through the ringer on there. Signed with LSU, transferred to Arkansas, had a really good year last year. This is the younger brother. The older brother was a freak, Lance Jackson. We're waiting on the testing data from UA Houston over the weekend. But by all means, had a really good day. Hudson Standish, our guy on our scouting team, here's what he said. Improved functional strength and promising athletic traits to bully offensive linemen or leave them in the dust with a lightning quick first step. We like that. Shout out Hudson Standish. Does a tremendous job for us. But Drew, this was, you know, one of those guys you kind of put in the wait and see bucket. We like the tape, but we just needed more context. We'll get it back from UA Houston. You and I, through our friends at UC Report, will be able to look at the tape, kind of see how he did, how he moved a little bit. And I think the biggest thing with him, just getting to see him and body type him a little bit.
Yeah, Landon Jackson is his older brother. He's the one that went, you remember him going viral for that like bag drill at the Future 50? I mean, he got absolutely roasted on social media. Just kind of, I don't know. Do you remember that or no? Do you have any idea what I'm talking about?
I do. Yeah, absolutely.
And then it's like, all right, turn around 3 years later, elite pass rusher in the SEC.
Right, right. Yeah, you know, the thing about him was quick twitch, explosive, played high off the ball, but also had a basketball background, if I remember correctly. And the other thing about him was just raw, and he was a waistbender, you know? So, I mean, what? That guy is probably going to be a day 2, day 3 NFL draft pick at the end of the day. So, I don't know, man. Everybody's such in a rush to go to social media and, you know, hate on a kid for whatever reason. But I remember watching that being like, man, this guy's got no idea what he's doing, but thinking it was a positive, right? Just because of how productive he had been already in his career at Texarkana.
So I think my takeaway on Lance Jackson, he's headed to Texas, committed to Texas, right? Think about them moving into the SEC. You want to stack the pass rushers. And, you know, we'll see, again, what comes from that UA camp in terms of numbers and the footage and him going through all the drills and whatnot. But was it last show we brought up? All right, guys that can move into the 32. You know, I think you can put Lance Jackson potentially in that category. I said, all right, it's going to be some defensive linemen that we just don't have a ton of information about. Lance Jackson looks bigger. I think he's going to be a name to know as we get into May and then obviously the senior seasons.
Guys, like I said, if you have any questions, make sure to put them in the chat. You can also put them on the 24/7 Sports YouTube channel there as well in the chat. Make sure to like and subscribe. Drew, it was a busy weekend, it felt like, it just in terms of keeping up with college commitments, especially in 2025. You rang me on this. Jerome Bennis Jr. Out of Woodward Academy in Georgia, number 83 receiver. He committed to Notre Dame on St. Patrick's Day. Love that. Irish now up to 18 commitments. They have the number one ranked class in 2025. Jerome Bittis Jr., Drew, he's not the first one, right, when it comes to, what would you call them, legacy prospects for Notre Dame? I mean, a lot of genetics, a lot of traits there in this Notre Dame class.
Should we call Notre Dame NFLU? I mean, this is crazy. And I have started tracking every NFL legacy per cycle, right? And I think I'm up to 45 names in the 2025 cycle. No one has multiple NFL legacies committed.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Besides Notre Dame. So they got Jerome Bettis Jr., son of Jerome Bettis. They have Plaxico Burress' son, Elijah Burress, committed. They have Ivan Taylor, Ike Taylor's son, committed. And they also got James Flanagan at tight end, who I love. I love me some James Flanagan. His dad and grandfather both played in the NFL. They're also in the running for Nathaniel Owusu-Boateng. They call him Wu. That's what the kids call him at IMG Academy. His brother is with the Cleveland Browns. Go back to last cycle. They got Bryce Young, son of Bryant Young, Hall of Fame pass rusher, and Kennedy Urlacher, son of Brian Urlacher. It just seems like they just collect these NFL legacies. I love it.
I'd be fascinated to see how these guys pan out. I mean, I was thinking about that. I'm like wondering if there is a certain effort by Marcus Freeman and his staff to say, you know what, we feel a little bit better when it comes to the genetics and the fit of how a certain player kind of molds into the next level. You know, and you think about these guys, man, I just feel like there's a higher floor with a lot of these players because they've been around it and the expectations are a little bit different being raised by a former NFL player and somebody that's done it at a really high level and also like a level of humility. And the first name that kind of came to mind for me was Braden Rice, you know, and I thought about him for a couple different reasons. I thought, all right, here's the son of Jerry Rice and a guy that when he came out, quite honestly, was a little stiff, was a little linear, was explosive, had some redeeming traits, but kind of overachieved at the next level, quite honestly, at USC. And I think he's going to have a good chance to maybe go in that early day three range in this year's upcoming NFL draft. But I think about that a little bit because it's like, all right, these guys, they have a pro's mentality, you know, not to be punny or anything like that, but the way that these guys approach the game, and yes, it's a case by case, not all of them are created equally, but you wonder with Notre Dame, like you go back and you watch Jerome Bennis Jr., the tape didn't really pop for me. Two-way player, good player, high floor. You watch the combine tape and it's like, I don't think one ball hit the ground. You know, you see the way that he moves a little bit. You see the way that he competes. Yes, he is what he is. He might have some deficiencies, but I mean, that guy's a winnable player a guy that ultimately at the end of the day is going to be a good program player. And I think, you know, outside of guys like Ivan Taylor Jr., who are just, you know, I think those guys are needle movers. Like, I don't know if you can really go wrong with some of these guys that they've taken.
So I don't know if it's, all right, this is the guys in South Bend. We are looking for NFL legacies. I think it's more of Notre Dame is attractive to the NFL legacies. I think it resonates with the parents, the fathers who have been in the league, who have been around football. For some reason, I think they are just attracted to Notre Dame. And it's not really some reason. Like, Notre Dame's a storied program. Notre Dame, you're going to get a good education. I think it's just, it makes sense. You know, guys that have been in the league, have been around. I mean, think about all the different alums in the locker rooms. Like, Notre Dame carries a lot of weight, it seems like. And this has been the case for a while, but I just think in this 2025 cycle, you look up four NFL legacies, potentially five. I mean, three of those guys are like star players on Sundays.
The Irish, they're in the genetics business. 18 commitments, only almost a third of them have some type of genes connected to the NFL. Drew, a couple other commitments over the weekend. How about Tay Harris, the number 11 safety, number 125 player overall, a guy that is a new face in our top 247. Well, he commits to Clemson. And Drew, guess what? Don't look now. Dabo Swinney and the Tigers are up to number 3 in the 247 sports composite team rankings. We talk about it all the time, right? It's a thin margin of error for Clemson when it comes to the high school ranks with their reluctancy to utilize the transfer portal. It's neither here nor there. That's just the way that they choose to go. Drew, I think we're big fans of Tay Harris, a guy that reportedly ripped off a 4.38 on the lasers in Miami. I think nothing against Tay Harris. I think sometimes you got to be skeptical of that, but okay. I mean, you see him.
Well, he's ran the fastest 40-yard dash time on the Under Armour circuit so far. So,
hey, I'm not hating on it. I'm just saying 4.38. That's blazing in an explosive lower half.
I get what you're hinting at, but it's the fastest. He was the fastest guy at the camp. That says a lot down in South Florida.
I'm not being a hater. I think it's very impressive. 4.38, very impressive. I haven't seen a 4.340 on the lasers in the last 2 years. Have you?
No. Oh, in Indianapolis, maybe.
Right. There you go. Tay Harris can run. That's what we know. Versatile safety, a little bit raw in pass coverage. I like this kid, Drew. Even when he got beat in Miami in one-on-ones, he was rarely out of position. I mean, you talk about recovery speed, dynamic, short area. And I like the fact, like I said, he needs coaching. I don't think that's necessarily a negative because you think about the type of player he is already. Once he gets to that next level, I think, Drew, sky's the limit for Tay Harris.
Excellent take for them. I mean, we don't need to go down the whole transfer portal path. And I think he's a guy that can play early, and that's important for the Tigers. Let me ask you this, Cooper. They're sitting number 3 right now. I think a lot of people would be surprised in the college football media to see the Tigers right there, because I think a lot of people are selling stock in Dabo and the Tigers. Can they finish with the top 3 class? Or, excuse me, top 10, not top 3.
Top 10 class. Yeah, I think that's doable. They have 11 commits. I think the other thing about Notre Dame we need to mention, they're up to 18, right? I think if you look at the rest of the top 10, nobody has more than 11, which would be Clemson and Penn State. So you look at Clemson, 10 4-stars, only 1 3-star. Isaiah Campbell, Amari Adams, Ari Watford, Gideon Davidson, Braden Jacobs, Tay Harris, all guys in our top 247, not to mention Easton Ware as well. So, Drew, they've done a good job. I mean, you think about quality and quantity. It's not just one of those where they have, all right, they have, you know, 5 or 6 more guys committed than the next highest program. I think they've done a really good job in terms of seeking out quality. And you mentioned, I think you and I, if we had to put money on it right now, they'll probably end up with David Sanders too, right? And they're doing a good job with Josh Petty. I just think they've, for whatever reason, they're more dialed in 2025 than I think we've seen in quite some time.
Well, you rattled off the guys in the top 247. I'm a big fan of Carlton Preston, who they got committed out of Virginia. He's a high 3-star for us. I love him. I think he's like a Marquise Brown. And then they got Logan Brooking, committed tight end out of the Savannah area. His dad played in the NFL. You want to talk about NFL legacies? Clemson's got two of them. So I lied earlier. You got Brandon Jacobs' kid and Logan Brooking, whose dad played in the NFL. I gotta check myself on that.
The son of Keith Brooking? Is that right?
Yeah.
Logan Brooking?
Yeah.
How about that, man? Atlanta Falcon. That guy would give me nightmares growing up as a New Orleans Saints fan. Good player. All right, Drew. Tyler Miller, number 25, offensive tackle, number 235, tucked in the back end of the top 247 out of Laurel, Mississippi. Shout out Laurel, Mississippi. One of my favorite, I would say, exits on my way to Birmingham from New Orleans. Love Laurel. Drew, LSU's class right now, they're up to number two. You think about Bryce Underwood, DeCorian Moore, Harlan Berry. Tyler Miller now joins his class. We got to see him in Atlanta, and thank goodness we did, because we know it's hard to find and typically get live exposure on Mississippi kids. But this kid, what'd he check in? I think shade over 6'5", 315 pounds, broad chest, long arms, 35 inch plus. Drew, strong at the point of attack. I think has some foundational athleticism to kind of work with. When he gets his paws on you, it's over. You know, I think the biggest thing is he athletic enough to kind of play out on the perimeter as a tackle? We'll see. I kind of see right tackle. If it doesn't work out there, I think you can move him inside a guard. I don't think it's going to be a problem at all.
This is Brad Davis being Brad Davis, man, right? I mean, Tyler Miller, I think he was listed at like 6'8 for a good chunk in the 24/7 sports database. So it was good to figure out he's closer to 6'5 than he is a NBA player at 6'8. You look at their O-line class, and it's starting to come together. I mean, Mario Nash, I know me and you talk about him all the time behind the scenes. I think you got to watch out for LSU there, another kid out of Mississippi. They got Devin Harper committed, a big, big functional athlete. I mean, LSU just continues to reload at that position, and it's important given the premier offensive playmakers they got committed. Bryce Underwood, DeCorian Moore, Harlan Berry, you just brought them up. So big pickup for LSU over the weekend.
LSU, man, it just seems like every other year they got a special year when it comes to recruiting. That's kind of where they are right now. 2025 seems to be an ideal year for the Tigers. DeCorian Moore going to be a name to watch. Certainly just came out with his top four, Drew, even though he's committed. You have any thoughts on that?
I missed that. Who's in the top four?
I believe Ohio State, Oregon, LSU, and I want to say Texas. Could be wrong. When I saw that, I'm just like, not surprised. Nothing surprises
me. If you were advising a player of his caliber, why would you not tell him to put out a top five, a top four, or a top three?
It's a good point, because I think it's going to happen anyway. It could happen naturally. You know, you don't have to do it with all the smoke and mirrors, but.
Like, was there an edit for this thing? Or was
there was an edit. Okay. Edit and everything. You
that's
know,
that's a first. That is a first.
All right, you ready for some viewer questions?
I'm ready.
Okay, the first one I have to get to, and from our guy Jason Hines. He says, Oyster Boys, love the pod in the show. How much of an impact do camps like Elite 11 go into a prospect's rankings? Also, are some camps weighted more than others? Thanks. Thank you, Jason. I think this is good because I'm going to tag on another question here. I think somebody asked later on in the chat, they said, do you guys evaluate the camps or the tape? Could have been a sarcastic question, but I think it's an important question to kind of ask. So I'll kind of piggyback there. The Elite 11 is important for body typing. And I've said this in a multitude of ways, and I can't really kind of bang this drum enough. A lot of the times that we are seeing these guys, especially as they're going in their senior season, is the first time that we are seeing these guys live during the evaluation process. Yes, the tape is your baseline. You will always come back to the tape. But without the context of seeing these players and prospects live, and without the supplementary data points, which is without verified size, speed, and athleticism, it's like flying a plane without autopilot or radar. It's incredibly difficult. And those tools and that technology helps us do our job a lot better. And you have to remember, we are not projecting Saturday success. We're projecting Sunday success. I'll tell you a story. Last year, Andrew and I went out to Elite 11 finals. We had Elijah Brown and we had Julian Sand in the same neighborhood. with me really being the guy that liked Elijah Brown a lot more on tape, was 29-1 as a junior at Mater Dei, which I thought was not only a huge feat for him, but something that playing at that high of a level and a guy that kind of checked a lot of boxes for us, it said a lot. Greg Biggins, our national analyst out on the West Coast, said, "Hey, I feel it's pretty clear that Julian Sain has the nod." Andrew and I both went into that event with a very objective vantage point. Go into that event, and it was very clear that, like, Julian Sain, day one clear, and not from a body type standpoint, but Drew, once we saw it live on air, that Julian Sain was just in a completely different category than Elijah Brown. So how much did that impact Julian Sain's ranking versus Elijah Brown's ranking? Elijah Brown ended up, I think, what, in the sixth round, right?
Day three
for us. Quite honestly, that context is huge. And guess what? DJ Lagway was a guy that we saw that really struggled pretty much in all 3 days. But you could see the physical upside and capability in DJ Lagway. But he struggled on air for a guy that you expected more from. It wasn't the cleanest. The footwork was choppy. He was an upper body thrower. You could nitpick all day. Ultimately, at the end of the day, we knew DJ Lagway had all the physical tools that you could seek in the position, but there was going to be some coaching and some nuance that had to take place for him to reach his ceiling. He goes out there, puts it together, has an extraordinary senior year. So it's a balance, and it's not really, hey, I weigh this one more than that one, but they play off of each other. It's a complementary kind of system when you start to evaluate these players.
Well, Lagway was the one I was going to bring up, right? I mean, I got all the quarterbacks written up, and that is based off of the junior tape watching games, right? So you have an idea, but everything's an evaluation. So now you're going to put these 20 arms in the same pool, in the same area. You can see who is first in line. You can see body type. All right, this kid's 6'1", but I think if you put, you know, I keep saying it, Husan Longstreet's like the biggest 6'1.5" quarterback I've seen out there. He's twitchy. It's different. You can see how the ball comes out. So I think for us, it provides valuable live eye exposure. And with DJ Lagway, if our rankings were just dictated on the Elite 11 finals, we would have punted on him after those 3 days in Los Angeles. He was good, or, you know, middle of the pack day one. Day two, the pro day, I remember there was one throw where I turned to you and I'm like, all right, there was probably only one other quarterback on this field that can make that throw, when he ran across his body and fired it down the field. And then he struggled with the 7-on-7. I remember being asked on camera, the CBS Sports HQ set, like, who do you feel good about rankings wise? And I think I said DJ Lagway. I think he was 46. I feel like we have him in the right spot. Want to see what he does as a senior. You mentioned, heck of a senior season. What, with Max Preps Player of the Year, Gatorade Player of the Year, shoots up, finishes as a 5-star and, you know, a top 10 player for us. So it's all an evaluation. You know, I think when we can get around these kids, the ability to match the tape up to, all right, this is what I see on tape, now I just want to see him in person, are my eyes and my thoughts lining up? And sometimes they don't. You know, sometimes your opinion can change based on what you have seen. So the Elite 11 is important in that sense. I don't think it really kills guys, and I don't think it, you know, really rockets guys up. I mean, it can certainly make it easier to stack them. And to echo on, you know, Elijah Brown, people are going to bring that up, you know, Elijah Brown's senior season, I think there was some questions that came to light if you watch some of those games, especially in the playoffs, for him being in an all-star team. And, you know, base combine that with what we saw at the Elite 11, you know, that's why he slid down the board for us.
Yeah, well said. I think a lot of people get frustrated, especially, you know, you might be out there listening. It's like, man, these guys are talking about track and field times. You're talking about combine times. Like, when are you ever really going to talk about the player? I get it, you know, but really, ultimately, we're trying to project guys to the NFL. I mean, we're talking about a 4-year sample size where you're talking about the physical growth and the on-field development of a player, you have to take into consideration. It is very difficult to do. And I've said this and I will continue to say it. We're evaluating the athlete a lot more so than the player, you know, and I think that's kind of where the difference of opinion comes in sometimes. Drew, this question I like for you because I think you're actually a big fan of the state, and I kind of want you to kind of elaborate on it a little bit. But Englewood E, Chi-Town, shout out Chi-Town. He asks, would you guys ever do a breakdown of Chicago area type top prospects? Chicago doesn't get enough love for the athletes we produce in football. The reason I wanted to bring this question up is, Drew, because I think you're a huge fan of the state of Illinois in terms of what they produce in NFL talent every year. And I think I got a pretty good idea of what you're looking up right now. But they were sneaky. What were they, like top six in terms of producing NFL talent?
I got to pull it up. Keep talking.
Yeah, but you get the general idea. And I think back to Luke Fickell's time at Cincinnati. I think about Brett Bielema, the job that he's done at Illinois. Drew, I think you're always quick to point out in terms of their ability to ID, not only in-state, but in the Sunshine State as well. Illinois is one of those sneaky, sneaky states, and I think Luke Fickell in Wisconsin, similar to how he did in Cincinnati, we never talk about Illinois. But Illinois, you know, it's definitely an area to pay attention to.
Yeah, and this kind of goes back to the last question, right? All right, how do you value these events, right? These off-season events, because that's what we're in right now. Like OT7 and like the battle seven on seven, it is what it is. But what's unique about those events is you get a team like Boom Football, which is based out of the Chicagoland. You know, they come down and you can evaluate a ton of these guys. So that's another instance where, all right, maybe we won't see these individuals at a certain camp, but hey, in this 7-on-7 setting, I got 20 guys from Illinois here playing in Orlando. I think that is, you know, really, really important, really, really helpful for us. That's why we go to those camps. It's not like, all right, we're going to try to rank the best 7-on-7 player. It allows us to body type, see how these kids move around. So that's important. I looked it up. Past 5 years, states with the most NFL draft picks per year, Illinois number 11, 6.8 selections. I think it's underrated. And I would love to maybe dig in a little bit more on Illinois and some of the recruits that are coming out of there. I mean, J.J. McCarthy, is Illinois going to claim that? They absolutely should. I know he played a year at IMG Academy. But, man, and there's some guys we like. Nathaniel Marshall in the 25, right? 25 cycle. Marquise Lightfoot last year. I think it's – I don't know if I've said this. Like, Miami is investing a ton of time recruiting that area under Mario Cristobal.
Yeah, especially the top end guys. I mean, you think about Justin Scott too, right? That's the big one, the 5-star at the top of the board, and then Lightfoot certainly was knocking on that door as well. I don't know. I kind of want to dig in on that Miami Illinois pipeline. Do you have any idea why they're having success there? I mean, I got an idea.
Well, but Mario's a maniac. I don't know if you buy into this, like. Miami's not Chicago in terms of the city, but it's a big metropolitan. You're taking a kid from Chicago, putting him in a big metropolitan like that. I think there could be some a little bit easier, maybe. I don't know.
Sure.
Just shooting from the hip.
Okay, next question from our boy, always in here, Michael, Dallas fan, my guy. Is Coach Marcus Freeman going to earn his own measurements level in recruiting rankings once they are difference makers on film in college games and NFL games? Example, Benjamin Morrison. Earn his own measurements. I think I know what you're saying there. Is he going to get some love for his job as talent identification and evaluation? Yeah, Benjamin Morrison was certainly a good one. Guy we had as a 4-star, right? But I think outside of the top 247. Drew, maybe you have access to it now.
Pulling it up.
Yeah, I don't have the recollection of what we had on Benjamin Morrison.
It was at 90 outside, number 37 corner.
Did we have any verifieds on him?
He missed his junior season due to injury and COVID.
Plays into it a little bit.
NFL legacy.
There you go.
Dad played 4 seasons with the Cardinals.
And Notre Dame. Got to dig in on that, man. Marcus Freeman has done a really good job. I think we talked about it last week. Big fan of Marcus Freeman. Like what they're doing. There's one position, like, I think they got to continue to just throw everything at. I think it's receiver. You know, I think they got to figure out a way to continue to stockpile talent to upgrade the speed and athleticism of that room. I don't know if they're dynamic enough yet.
Can I? I know that. I don't think Freeman started this, but I think the Pot of Gold Day is so cool. It's so unique in the recruiting space. Are you familiar with it, Cooper?
I'm not familiar with it, and maybe our listeners aren't familiar with it. So why don't you tell us about it?
St. Patrick's Day, they hand out a ton of offers, and that's why you saw Jerome Bettis Jr. Commit early Sunday morning. You know, they make a big deal about it. You'll see all the top prospects tweeting out graphics. Like, I think that is one of the more unique, like, cool things that they do. And I think it resonates a little bit with the kids. So I love that Freeman has, I think it started under Brian Kelly. I think it goes a ways back, but he has carried the torch on that department. There's like nothing else like it out there. Like, no other schools try to claim a day. And it makes sense, obviously, St. Patrick's Day. I think Freeman and his staff do an excellent job of making evaluations. How about Jordan Faison, who made plays for Notre Dame as a true freshman, former lacrosse player? You know, they uncovered him down in Broward County, was going to play lax for the Irish and just practice with the football team. Needed out of necessity due to injuries. And now he is one of their top playmakers. They just took a commitment from his younger brother in the 2026 cycle yesterday, Dylan Faison. So I think they do a good job.
Shout out Notre Dame. Obviously, I think we're coming along. Certainly me. Big fan of what Marcus Freeman is doing. All right, Drew, last question for you. Andrew, what has been the biggest difference for you from covering teams such as Notre Dame and Miami to now being in the scouting department? And how was that transition for you? A little philosophical here, a little individual question for Andrew.
I like doing this role more in terms of where we are at in college football, right? I think, and I have respect for the guys that do it, but, you know, just kind of predicting where an individual is going to try to end up signing or committing, I think it is as hard as ever just with the NIL. For me, it's been a learning period. I'm happy to have, you know, the guy on the other screen right there, Cooper, you know, as someone to lean on. And it's really been eye-opening going from covering, you know, a recruiting board of 60 names to, you know, thousands upon thousands. Last night, my wife's like, oh, are you done with work? I'm like, no, there's an endless pool of work. I can keep watching guys until midnight here. So it's been different. It's been fun to learn. I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, you know, we are absolutely going to miss on evaluations. We're not going to get it absolutely right. I think it would be ridiculous to assume that you know all. And I'm always trying to learn, always trying to learn and improve our process. I think here in the past few months with what we've put together in terms of the software we're using, you've heard me and Cooper bring it up, NextGen. We're doing some special things behind the scenes in terms of, you know, how we're constructing our top 247s, how we're doing our grading scale. And I think it's only going to get more ramped up here, in the coming years. I'm really, really fired up about our product and, you know, this top 247 we just rolled out for 2025. In my head, I've already turned my page to 2026. Like, I think it is as most buttoned up it has ever been at this stage in a cycle. And that fires me up.
Yeah, I think Drew hit it on the head. I think the other thing, you know, that we can't say enough is, like, we're going to miss a lot. That's part of it. This is not a math equation. It's not something that you have down to a science. Drew shared a graphic with me, I think, of the quarterbacks taken 2 years ago. I think six out of the seven outside of Brock Purdy are now on different teams, right? So that's a billion-dollar industry in the NFL. Those guys are still trying to get it figured out. And they have a multitude of resources and millions of dollars invested. So it's a privilege we get to do this every day. Drew, good answer on that. All right, maybe one last question here from our guy, Cotton. He says, is interior defensive line the hardest position to evaluate for stars? Seems rare. Any five stars. Seems rare. Any get five-star status. Most go to skill players. Drew, I was a little bit ahead of you on this, and I went back and I looked at 2024. You know, you look at the top of our defensive line board last year, LJ McCray, I think, is a guy that is probably going to play on the edge, but has some inside-outside versatility. Winery certainly going to make his living on the perimeter. Justin Scott going to play on the inside. David Stone going to play on the inside. Dominic McKinley going to play on the inside. Bryce Young, certainly another guy that can play three technique, five technique, can do a lot of different things. And then Edrick Houston was on the outside of the top 32, can play inside out as well. So three guys for sure, and Scott, Stone, McKinley. You know, Cotton, I don't think it's that difficult of a position to evaluate, quite honestly, when you think about everything that you look for in an interior defensive lineman. We talk about, you know, meeting those prerequisites of height, weight, speed, not so much speed on the interior, but power and explosiveness, ability to leverage and move opposing offensive linemen with ease. And then I think these guys' ability just to be nimble, fleet-footed athletes, also make plays in space, play the run well. But in terms of what they can do on the interior that separates them is if they can add that ability to rush the passer, I think that just kind of stands out. And let me go through the list. Justin Scott was a two-way guy. There were some early conversations about, you know, some people here thought that he might be better suited as offensive lineman. I thought that was a real conversation. David Stone was maybe one of the most productive players of the last 2 years at IMG. I think, Andrew, you and I talked about it when we evaluated Francis Malinoa versus Damon Wilson. It was David Stone that our eyes kind of kept gravitating to. And then the last one, Dominic McKinley, was the most difficult one to figure out of Acadiana High School in Lafayette, Louisiana. Didn't get eyes on him until Orlando, Under Armour. And here was a guy that flashed on tape, felt like he should have dominated, really didn't, showed up in Orlando, put it all together, and it was easy from that point forward. I think you could really kind of see the vision with the players. So in terms of interior defensive linemen, man, they're hard to find. So when they pop, you feel pretty good about where you situate them inside the top 32.
Yeah, I'm wondering if this question from Cotton is just more like, all right, is he talking about, you know, our 2025 top 247, the update, right? This initial 16 five stars. I think if you look at IDL, I mean, we only got two of them in there, Elijah Griffin, Justice Terry. I think, and I agree with what everything you said there, Cooper. I mean, we kind of got to take what the board gives to us at times, right? And you go back to the 24 cycle, it was loaded at wide receiver. And, you know, we always bring up the fact that we're using the NFL draft as our compass and, you know, positional value and all that stuff. I mean, if we could stamp 32 defensive linemen, like I would love to do that. But I think it's a position where it takes some time for these guys to emerge, right? It takes a little bit. It's more of a longer burn than some of the skill players, right? Some of these receivers that have 1,000-yard seasons as freshmen and sophomores and, you know, are more household names given what they do on the off-season circuit. So I think it's a little bit of a longer burn. It's not like we are trying to shove as many skill players as we can into the 32 at the top. You know, it's more reflective of on what we know at this stage.
Guys, we appreciate you joining the show today. And Drew, before we get going, any final thoughts before we head to, is today Tuesday already?
It is Tuesday.
Yeah, I guess it is. We're having the show, right? Tomorrow's Wednesday, hump day. The week is moving fast, faster than I can keep up with. Drew, any final thoughts before we head to the middle of the week?
Okay, burned a ton of 2026 tape on Sunday, yesterday. Chris Henry, Jr., Ohio State commit in 2026. Holy smokes. That's all I'm going to say. I think what he put on tape is freaky as a sophomore. And you think about Ohio State, what they have done at wide receiver. I don't know if he would overlap with Jeremiah Smith in the ideal world, but man, highest graded player I have so far in 26.
Man, his pops was such a stud, man. He was a stud. Belchase, Louisiana, I think.
I texted you guys this, like, trying to search for a player comp, just like a loose one at this stage. I'm like, what about dad?
I think you're on it. He does kind of remind me of his dad.
And if we can get, I know there's some producers listening to the show. I want to splice up some of Chris Henry Jr.'s highlights alongside dad's. Like, we can pull up, go in the CBS vault of footage. I think that'd be awesome.
Andrew's putting on his producer cap. Aaron Grisham, I know you're listening. Sanlay as well. Guys, like I said, we appreciate you joining us. We'll be back same time tomorrow. Like I said, Tuesday, Wednesday, 11 o'clock Central, noon Eastern time. Guys, please make sure to like and subscribe. If you're on X right now, go to YouTube. It just takes a second. It's a big thing for the boys. If you're on here on a Tuesday, an hour and four in, more credit to you. That's a huge favor that we could ask. Also, if you're listening on the audio waves via podcast, make sure to leave a review. Very much appreciated, guys. As always, we thank you for your time. For Andrew Ivins, I'm Cooper Battagna. We'll see you tomorrow, same time.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.